What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Primetime Sports Podcast, hosted by Joey Maylari. So today, very special day. Yesterday, had my good friend Spencer Bono on, and have another really good friend of mine, Brian Gagnon, an account manager here in ticket sales at BC with me and Spencer. Today, we're going to talk a lot of baseball, a lot of Red Sox, give our update on the way things are going. We'll also give our all 21st century Red Sox lineups and our all-time Red Sox lineups. So stay tuned to that. It's going to be great. But how are you doing today, Brian?
Good, Joey. Happy to be here. Glad we were able to find some time to talk some Sox.
This is awesome. Thank you for taking the time. Much appreciated. I know this will be a great episode since we're big Boston sports fans. Obviously, for me, I'm a Red Sox and a Bruins fan. And then you got Red Sox, Bruins, Celtics, Patriots. You're everything Boston. So having your passion and energy on here is going to be electric. So we're lucky to have you. We'll dive into the Red Sox right now, where they stand. 30-34 overall. Some bad splits over the last 10, 20, 30 games. 3-7 over the last 10. 12-28 over the last 30. 12-18 over the last 30, I should say. What has been the main issue? Is it the one-run games? Is it the hitting in, you know, certain situations with running the score position? What would you say is your main problem with the Red Sox right now?
I mean, I definitely think it's all of that. You know, this team, you'll get a runner to second, you'll get a runner to third, and then, you know, boom, 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 three outs, inning over. And, you know, it's been that almost every night. But I think one of the main issues that I have, I know I've expressed this to you a lot, this team's just going out there to play. Nobody's playing. They're not playing for themselves. They're not playing for each other. These guys, they're going out there, they're playing ball, and that's it. There doesn't seem to be any purpose behind what they're going out and doing. And, you know, that's, I think, what has led to a lot of the struggle. I mean, this team's got no identity. You know, we're, you know, 60 plus games into the season now. And, you know, a week and a half ago, you were two games out of first place in the East, and now you're sitting in fourth more than 10 games out. I mean, you've got to figure something out, and I think it starts with finding an identity as a team. I think that's one of the main issues right now.
I think you said it perfectly. I think when you look at that loss a couple nights ago, they lost to the Angels in extra innings. They had their chances in the eighth and the ninth innings. The Red Sox, even in the 10th, had their opportunity with the ghost runner at second. And after that game, the Red Sox in the dugout, which I know I talked to you about this already, you look at the Red Sox dugout after the game, Zach Kelly didn't have a good outing out of the pen, obviously had an error as well on a bunt. No one's patting him in the back saying, hey, you're good. Abreu had a tough strikeout late in that game in the ninth or the 10th inning. Trevor Story had a strikeout late in that game. I think it was in the 10th inning. But nobody's patting each other on the back saying, hey, you're good. It was just everybody has their head down, which I understand after a loss, no one's going to be thrilled and psyched. But there was no care and compassion for the teammate next to you. There was no identity. They weren't fighting for each other. Like you said, I think they're just checking a box. They're showing up, getting their paychecks, and there's no heart or desire on this team. And that's an issue. I would agree with that, because when you lose 17 one-run games, half of your losses are in one-run games. If you're losing that many one-run games, there's something going on. You have your opportunities. There's 17 winnable games right there that you lost. There's some issue more than, you know, just they're not hitting, you know, with guys in scoring position. Maybe just the locker room isn't clicking. Maybe the Devers situation before the year began kind of tore things up. I'm not really too sure. But 6-17 one-run games is just abysmal. I don't know if you can get any worse than that besides, I guess, Chicago, the White Sox.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm Chicago, yeah. I mean, Colorado as well this year is having a tough go with it. I mean, we play them, I think, in a week. So who knows how that's going to go. But yeah, I think, you know, you alluded to the Devers situation that started back up in spring training. I think that's, you know, I think you're a fool if you think it's not at least a small part of it. You know, you have your guy. You know, you signed him to this massive contract a few years ago because, you know, this is the guy that you want to lean your lineup on for the future. And you go out, you sign Bregman, which was a huge signing. I was excited about it. I know you were too. A lot of Red Sox Nation was. Mm-hmm. Because the two just don't compare. You know, Bregman in the field compared to Raffy in the field, they're two very different players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it definitely put a bad taste in his mouth because, you know, he thought he was getting paid this $300 million to swing the bat and play the field when I definitely think there's always been a part of me that thought, you know, we paid him that to swing the bat. Let's go find a third baseman. So I think it definitely, I mean, obviously put a bad taste in his mouth. I think some of the guys that have been around for a while, you know, very well could have put a bad taste in their mouth as well. And I think that also, you know, can obviously contributes to, you know, the play that we've seen on the field, but I think it contributed to the slow start as well. You know, you come out opening day, Willier Abreu hits, I think it was one or two home runs, and you're like, all right, you know, maybe this is going to be an exciting team to watch this year. And then you drop the last three games of that series, and I think one or two of those were one-run games, so that's really where it started. I don't want to derail us here, but, you know, perfect comparison example of this, you know, right down the road on Causeway. You have a little bit of a different situation with Jeremy Swayman holding out because the Bruins don't sign him to a contract extension. But then, you know, once they do and he starts playing, I mean, this was probably one of the worst seasons of Bruins hockey I've ever seen. And, you know, part of that is because, you know, someone that you think is the guy going forward for you has issues with management, and then it just, it, you know, creates a ripple effect throughout the rest of the team and especially in the locker room. So I think the Devers situation has been a big part of it.
Definitely. I think that's a great comparison, too, if you look at the Bruins situation. You have something going on before the season, even the beginning of the season, with Jeremy Swayman, which he wasn't ready, obviously, to play right away because, you know, didn't have all the conditioning last summer because they signed him late. And then you look at the Devers situation before the season begins, you know, right as we're getting into the middle part of the spring training, getting ready for opening day. Bregman ends up being that starting third baseman for the most of that second half of spring training games, which Devers didn't play any games at third base in spring training. And it just kind of
held out
things
for the first 2.5 weeks of spring training.
You're right. Yeah,
I think it was. He had some. It was forever before he played his first game.
Yeah, they said it was he was getting back from an injury, but I do think the third base situation played a role with him, you know, sitting out. And I think that's the thing, which you, like you alluded to with the Swayman situation, it just derails not your expectations necessarily, since things are high with the Red Sox and the expectations are very high. I thought they were going to win this division. I know you were very much confident in them as well. I think everybody was confident in the Red Sox, and for a good reason. I mean, this team was a team last year that was 500, and you added Garrett Crochet and Alex Bregman. I mean, this team should have been much better than they're playing right now. But I do think mixing up probably the locker room before the season began, some people side with Devers at third, some people side with Bregman at third, probably put, you know, a tough taste in the locker room. And obviously, guys probably chose a side each way, and now who knows what's going on. I mean, this is just all what we're thinking on the outside. Who knows what's really going on the inside, but this is all speculation based on what we're watching. It doesn't seem like they're playing with much heart. And I think with the Devers situation, like you said, Bregman's a much better defensive third baseman, and Devers had his chance maybe to go to first. Obviously, he didn't want to do that. And now with Bregman hurt, and Bregman's going to be out till probably July, August with that quad strain, unlikely Devers picks up the glove again. I know he was taking some reps at shortstop. He took some reps at third base even a couple weeks ago, you know, in practice. But it seems like he's just going to stay at DH. But like you said, I mean, the bat is the reason he got signed probably, because he had a great bat. And you don't really have guys that can give you, you know, 30 home runs and hit 290 and drive in 110 RBIs. You don't get those guys very easily. You don't.
Haven't had a guy like that since, you know, Ortiz did it for the better part of 20 years. And, you know, Devers came along. We saw a lot of Ortiz-esque signs in him and the way he swung the bat. So, yeah, I mean, huge part, obviously, of why he got the contract. But one other thing that isn't talked about as much, I don't even think I've brought it up to you at all, really. You know, we talk about 6-17, 6-18, whatever it is in one-run games now. 500 at home? I mean, this is a team that, and I mean, this is a city in general. Our guys play well at home, whether it's the Celtics, Bruins, Patriots, Red Sox. You know, this is an exciting fan base to come in and you know, to sit and watch, to come and play in front of. And I think that's another huge issue because, I mean, a lot of these one-run games have come at Fenway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you don't sit here quarter of the way through the season and expect, you know, a 500 home record, maybe on the road, okay, whatever, travel, wherever you're going, but you know, games at Fenway, these are games you got to win. You know, you're bound to lose some here and there, but I think, you know, I especially looking at this series with the Angels, I mean, that was just disappointment, just complete utter disappointment.
Yeah, the opportunities are there to win. And it's not even just that series. I mean, even on the road in Milwaukee, like, the Red Sox had their opportunities. They got walked off on. It was three times. Yeah, it was twice in Milwaukee, right? And it was like three times in like four different games or three times in five games. They just had a really bad stretch. And they were in a lot of these one-run games. So it's not like they're a completely, you know, uncompetitive team. It's not like they're getting blown up by 8 runs every single night. They'll go down 5 runs just about every single game, it seems. And they'll come back some nights because they do have some talent in this lineup. Guys are just not hitting as consistently as they once did. Willy Abreu's cooled off since probably the beginning, the middle part of May. Christian Campbell's been really cold over the last month. Trevor Story, obviously, has been really cold.
Where's he been?
Yeah, I mean, he had a couple good games beside in Milwaukee or right after Milwaukee. Maybe one time against the Angels, he had a couple good hits. But Story's been really struggling. He hasn't been the exact same. And I think, which this is something that I know me and you both want to talk about, struggling with runners in scoring position. Like you said, they'll get guys to second base, they'll get guys to third base, and then they're not getting those guys across. They'll have guys on first and second, nobody out, and they'll have a pop out and then 2 strikeouts, 3 dead outs. No one's moving up, not giving yourself a chance to even score a run. And these are some bad numbers. I mean, they have 174 strikeouts. 174 strikeouts with runners in scoring position. That's the most in Major League Baseball. A .239 batting average in the same situation with runners in scoring position. And then they only have 13 sacrifice flies with runners in scoring position. That's 25th in the MLB, which isn't great because they have the second most at-bats with runners in scoring position. So obviously the strikeouts are going to be higher because they have more plate appearances and at-bats with runners in scoring position. But only 13 sacrifice flies. They can't put the ball in play and move guys up. That's my problem. That's why I've told you since probably the first week of the season, which I know he's been hurt, and they have he has the labrum injury, and he's still, you know, coming back from that. But Masataka Yoshida, if he's in this lineup, you have a guy just like Alex Bregman that can put the bat to the ball in any situation. And you need that. You need that. I don't know what your thoughts are on Yoshida. I know you're very high on Roman Anthony, which I'm sure we'll get to that. But what are your thoughts on the Yoshida situation and, you know, obviously his progress coming back from it?
No, I'm on your side with this 100%. I've been a huge Yoshida fan since we picked him up. I mean, you look top to bottom of this lineup, find me someone that gets the barrel of the bat through the zone quicker and I'll wait. I mean, his hands are just so quick through the zone. Seems like, you know, when he's going, he can put just about anything in play. And at the end of the day, that's all you need to do.
Yep.
Because that's probably this team's biggest issue is just putting the ball in play. Mm-hmm. I played baseball growing up. I played a long time. I know you did too. And one of the biggest things that we are told in any situation, put the ball in play. Mm-hmm. Hit the ball on the ground. Make that – now, granted, these are professionals, but make the other team make the mistake. Mm-hmm. That's one saying that was engraved in my mind growing up playing baseball. Put it on the ground. Make them make the mistake. You've got guys in scoring position, you know, runner on second base. You hit it to the right side of the infield. That's going to move that runner up to third. Okay, runner on third, one out. Even if you pop one to the outfield, just get enough on it.
Yeah.
Especially if it's Duran. If you've got a guy, you know, Duran, Sadon, Hamilton.
Story.
These guys don't need a lot mm-hmm. to get – you don't need to hit it too far to get these guys mm-hmm. home.
Yeah.
So it's just I think – you know, he would be a huge addition to this lineup. You know, they've got him on the throwing program now that, you know, they show clips of every now and then. You know, the Sox will post, Nesson will post. But watching those, it doesn't make me feel great about his return because, you know, he's not throwing far. And he just, it looks really, really uncomfortable. And if he looks as uncomfortable as he does throwing the ball, he's not going to be able to swing a bat. Mm-hmm. I know the motion's a little different, but there's still that involvement with the, you know,
the shoulder and back.
Getting the shoulder and back involved, and mm-hmm. I think it would be tough for him. But, you know, so you do what you can there. But, yeah, I definitely think, you know, I don't think he's the answer. I don't think Roman Anthony's the answer. I think it's two guys you need to have in the lineup, but... you know, there's a lot of other things going on that I think internally amongst this team need to be addressed first.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think it's a simple fix where you plug and play Roman Anthony, you plug and play Marcelo Meyer and he comes up, you plug and play Masataka Yoshida. Like, and I know Meyer's been up and he's had his moments, but obviously he's struggling a little bit at the plate, which is understandable for a young player. But that's the thing. I don't think anybody plugs and plays in this lineup and we're a much better team. The issue is more than that, I think. I think there's something more going on in the team. And this is all speculation, as we've noted. But when you're watching this team play, it doesn't seem like they're playing with any heart. And I know when you call up a guy like Roman Anthony, which we'll get to that now, honestly, because this is probably the biggest topic in not just the baseball headlines, it's in the Red Sox headlines, baseball in general. The MLB, everyone's looking at Roman Anthony wondering when he's coming up. And I think you don't want to necessarily rush him up and throw him in a situation and then hurt his development and his growth potentially if you bring him up to the majors. Like Jackson Holliday came up pretty early last year and it took him a while to really get his footing, and he didn't really find his footing until now this year, a second year in the majors. But I know they don't want to really rush him, but and this Red Sox team isn't necessarily like a Roman Anthony away from winning the World Series, like you said. I mean, these 6-17 and one run games, that differential is really tough. You're struggling at Fenway as is, you're struggling in extra innings, you're not winning a Garrett Crochet starts. Like, there's a lot going on with this team. I don't think Anthony necessarily solves everything. Would it make things interesting and obviously add some juice to the fan base? Definitely. But like you already noted, you're not winning games at Fenway without him. You're not obviously winning Crochet games without him. So even if you add him to the lineup, I don't think everything's just solved. With Yoshida, like you noted, I think you said it great. He doesn't look necessarily ready when he's throwing the ball. If he is ready, I would throw him in left field. And then I know that probably hurts Anthony's chances or Rafaela's chances to get out there and get more playing time. But we'll see how things go. It seems like the Red Sox are done with Yoshida. That's just my thought process watching everything go down. So I think they are done with him. I don't think they necessarily even want him in the lineup with the way this whole situation's gone. I think a lot of Red Sox fans gave up on him pretty early. I think Yoshida, when he was healthy, was one of the more valuable pieces on this team. But people talk about the contract and everything and his fielding as an issue. But if you have a guy that can put the ball in play, it's important. Speaking about putting the ball in play, Roman Anthony's done that great, obviously, for AAA in Worcester, which this is a guy that you saw play in Worcester last year, did you? I know you went to a game in the past. I don't know if it was with him, but he got called up midway last year sometime in the summer. But he hit 9 home runs so far in the year, 907 OPS in Worcester, MLB's number one prospect. What are your thoughts on him? And I know you said plugging him into the lineup doesn't necessarily solve everything. When do you expect the Red Sox to call him up? If you had to guess, which it's tough. I know, it's tough.
Yeah, I think, I think realistically I expected it middle of May, I think, coming into the season. I thought he was going to get the call before Marcelo did. But it's tough because you look at the current outfield situation. Duran in left, Sadon in center, Willier in right. Now, you don't have to play everybody every day. You can't play 162 games. No one's really doing that. And you've seen guys get swapped in and out. We've seen a lot of Ref Snyder this year, which I don't mind. You know, the guy can, he can put the ball in play if a lefty's on the mound. He seems to have a little bit of difficulty with the right-handers, which obviously I get. You're batting on the same side of the plate as, the ball's coming in, so the arm angle is completely different. And I just think if we're going to be cycling through outfielders, I mean, give the kid a shot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw him play last summer after he got called up to Worcester once. Nothing too crazy, but I've been watching, a fair amount of keeping an eye on the Woo Sox this year and, keeping an eye on him specifically. I mean, everything that this kid hits, he just demolishes. I mean, the ball just flies off his bat. And, I think it's not the cure. Because, as we've both said, there's something going on in the locker room. Someone's not happy. Some groups of people are not happy. But I think, and also, I'm sick of hearing Alex Cora say, yeah, he's almost there. He's ready. No, this kid was ready coming out of spring training. I mean, 91 games in Worcester is what he's played, something like that. Maybe a little more, the stat I saw like a week ago. It took Jack Caglione 12 to get called up in Kansas City. Different situation, but the top prospect in their farm system, 12 games in AAA, and then boom, he's up. What's Roman still doing in Worcester? I don't know. I think it's something that, one, you just need to do. Do it, figure out how you want to do it afterwards. Is that cycling him through in right, cycling him through in center, in left? However you want to do it, you need to find a way to get the kid into the lineup. You need to get him up here. You need to keep him up here. Because, again, it's not the solution. But on the field, It's a guy that's going to give you pretty solid defense and can put the ball in play pretty regularly for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you said that all very well with the ref side of point. Ref side of plays with a lot of heart. You don't see many guys that
he does.
That play with a lot of heart and a lot of juice. But every game he's out there, doesn't matter the situation. And he only plays once, twice a week. You know, maybe sometimes three times at best, but usually two times a week he'll play. But you'll see him play with some heart, and you obviously saw him very concerned with the team after one of those losses. You could see he was very passionate and upset with the one-run losses.
He's been the most vocal player about it.
And he's been the only one, really, that's really showed that he's been frustrated with it. And there could be something going on in the locker room where, you know, maybe they're pointing fingers at guys like Trevor Story for struggling, or Willie Abreu, Christian Campbell. Like, people could be pointing fingers at each other, and that could be part of the issue. It may not just be the Devers situation, right? It could be other things. But I think you said it best, Roman Anthony. I thought he would be called out before Marcelo Meyer, but then you look at the positional, from his positional standpoint, Tristan Casas going down. Obviously increase the chances of Meyer getting called up. And the same thing with Christian Campbell, you know, being in the opening day lineup, which he was in it before Casas got hurt. But the Red Sox needed a second baseman before the season began. He was a little bit more ready before Meyer was, so Campbell makes the opening day lineup. And then obviously now with Bregman getting hurt, Meyer gets the call up. Anthony hasn't gotten the call up just yet, since obviously the outfield is for the most part very healthy, besides, you know, Yoshida being the guy. And I know Willier's banged up a little bit at one point, but he's been struggling even with or without the injury. But I do think he's ready to at least, you know, see how it goes, throw him in the lineup for a game or two, which when you call him up, he'll be here for a while. It's not going to be a couple games and send him up and down like they do with, you know, some pitches and stuff. They won't do that. Once he's in the lineup, he'll be here. And I think that's why they don't want to rush him, because if you bring him up and he struggles right away, it could hurt his development, and I understand that. But from the standpoint of you looking at the Red Sox outfield, Sadon's great defensively. He'll have his moments on offense like we saw the other night with the Angels game, which it was a walk-off home run, and I know people were really going at the Red Sox and the way Fenway Park's built, because, you know, that home run was the shortest home run by a Red Sox hitter in, you know, whoever knows how long.
Yeah, but you know what? You ask the normal baseball fan, your average baseball player, you put one around pesky pole. I know it didn't get fully all the way around the pole, but I mean, that might be foul in most other stadiums. I mean,
it is, yeah.
There's hardly any foul ground at Fenway, so mm-hmm. You know what? If that's, people can think what they want there. You know, a home run's a home run. I know we give a lot of crap to Yankee Stadium, especially out in right field. Mm-hmm. Oh, this wouldn't have been a home run anywhere else, but I saw something scrolling through the comment section of a post this morning, and it's, you know, well, what about nobody complains about all the singles off the monster that are home runs everywhere else? So,
yeah,
you know, it is what it is. It happened. It was a win. What I thought was interesting is some fans out there thought that this was the win. Oh, this is going to catapult this team. I don't think that's the case at all, mm-hmm. especially when you've got to make your first trip to the Bronx this weekend. I think this is a very important series. You know, obviously 4 games under 500 and you're forever back in the East right now. And so we'll see what happens. But yeah, I thought, you know, Little League home run wouldn't have been a home run anywhere else. You know what? End of the day, ball went over the wall in fair territory.
Yeah, we don't make the ballpark too, right? Exactly. We're not making the dimensions and stuff like that. So people that were complaining about that, I mean, they just gotta relax. But you know, fans are always gonna find a way to twist things, and that's just the 100%. Way it is. But when I look at this Red Sox rotation in the outfield, you got Duran in left, which are trade rumors, which I want to get your opinion on that in just a second. But you got Duran in left, Rafael are in center, you got Willier in right. Duran's the only guy that's going to be a mainstay in the lineup every single day, no matter what. Like you said, no one really plays 162 anymore. Duran's probably that only guy that will be there every lineup, whether it's a righty or lefty, whether he's struggling, whether he's hitting great. He'll be in the lineup every day. But besides that, Rafaela's bat, which it can get streaky, it's not something that's keeping you from bringing up a top prospect if he's ready. And the same thing with Abreu and Wright. He's been really struggling as of late, and there are some trade rumors around him. What are your thoughts on those two situations? Willie Abreu, trade rumors, Jarren Duran, trade rumors. Do you believe them? Do you think there's a chance the Red Sox could trade them? Because both of them have 3-ish years left of team control, and there are teams that are interested, like San Diego, that could potentially want to make a deal, especially for Jarren Duran. So do you buy into those trade rumors? Do you think they're legit?
I don't like to focus in on trade rumors until I see them pop up on ESPN headlines, because, you know, until that happens, a rumor's all it's going to be. I think you look at two guys like Duran and Abreu, you know, Durant's, what, 28, Abreu's 25, 26. So, you know, I think if you're gonna stand those two next to each other, and, you know, if I'm management, and it's, hey, pick one, I think I'm gonna lean a little bit more towards, you know, keeping Durant where he is. You know, you also have to look at, you know, what he does for this team. As you said, you know, if there's anyone in this lineup that could play 162, it's him. No one else in this lineup is gonna do that. Mm-hmm. You know, he's your leadoff guy, and, you know, leadoff guys everywhere. You know, you've gotta be the catalyst to your team. You've got to be the guy that sets the tone every night, every game, and, you know, kind of be the back, you know, one of the backbones of your team, really. So I think, you know, he's in a very important position in that leadoff spot. I also just think, you know, we've probably got the toughest left field in the league to play. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he does it really well. He patrols the field so well out there. I just think I don't see a situation in which we do trade him. Could I be way off here? 100%. But, you know, if I'm picking between the two, I'm gonna go with Jaren. Nothing against Willier. I mean, obviously coming off a Gold Glove season last year was huge for us out in right field. Heck of a start, you know, to the 25 season for us this year. Leads the team 13 home runs right now, but obviously has cooled off quite a bit. I don't know what to think, because, you know, when he's on, and he's probably got one of the best arms out in right field in the league too. I mean, you don't run on this guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having someone like that can patrol right field for you and throw just about anyone out at home from any part of the field. I mean, we haven't had that, not that we're super, super far removed from Mookie, but we haven't had that since Mookie. Mm-hmm. So it's tough, because there's a lot of pros to each guy, and, you know, they both bring a lot to the team. But I think sitting here right now, if you told me, hey, you need to make this decision right now, I'm going to go Durant. And then, you know, if you trade Abreu, you call Roman up. But
yeah,
I think, you know, put those two aside, I think there's one guy out there right now that I would say, hey, trade. And despite the fact that he hit the little league walk off the other day, I think it's because, I mean, to your point, you know, Sadon's bat's nothing special. You know, when he can get on, he can move around the base pass, and that's invaluable. You know, we've got three guys right now in Sadon, Hamilton, and Durant that, you know, can turn a single into a double just like that. And it's something that we haven't had really a lot of, at least in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. You know, you've never, since we've been around, the Red Sox have never been a running team. You mm-hmm. know, you had guys like Jacoby Ellsbury that could move, but, you know, Pedroia early on his career. But, I mean, you've never had, you know, three guys in the lineup that can do that. So it's nice to have that. But, and, you know, his defense is solid. You know, that throw in, what was it, game one or two of the – or, no, it was
game three.
Game three of the Angels that led to the two runs. I mean, you've just got to know situationally not to make that throw in that spot. But – I don't know. If you were to ask me if there's one guy out there that I'd replace Roman with, it would be Sadon. But I think going back to the rumors, I mean, I think they're just that, because I got a hard time thinking, especially with Durant, the Sox are going to move on from him. And from what I have seen, you know, San Diego has offered up quite the package. And from what I've heard, we've already said no. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think you said it all very well. I think if I'm picking one of those two guys, we're looking at Durant versus Abreu, who are the two trade rumor, you know, candidates as of right now. I'm keeping Durant. And if you look at Durant's game last year, right, top 10 in wins above replacement in the MLB, was an all-star game, MVP, and it was expected, at least in my eyes, he wasn't going to do the exact same thing this year. I knew he'd regress at least a little bit. I don't think he was, you know, going to hit 300 and, you know, have, you know, top five in doubles again and, you know, be a very good base stealer and also be the All-Star Game MVP again. Like, I didn't expect all of that again. I did think he would be a good player, and I know he's struggling at least a little bit in comparison to last year, but he did turn things on last year in the second half, and that obviously did, you know, catapult him, you know, potentially getting a big-time contract. The Red Sox obviously didn't pay him that in the offseason, and maybe want to see him prove it again. So that's why he's here, and that's why he's where he's at. But he's the only guy that's going to play on the field, you know, in field and hit 162 times a year, you know, especially if he's healthy. And if you look at Abreu, he struggled a little bit, like you noted, has come back down to earth, a good glove in right field. We'll have the occasional time when, like, he'll throw a lot of guys out. He'll have the occasional time when he's looking up, ready to throw a guy out, and the ball will just bounce off him to ground ball, and he'll miss it. But overall, very good right fielder. And then you look at, obviously, what he can do at the plate at times. A little bit streaky, just like Cedan. Cedan Rafael is also streaky. I would keep Rafael just because of the versatility. He can play a little infield, second, shortstop, or third. So I'd keep him just for that. And his bat does get streaky. He's been better over the past 2 weeks than probably Meyer's been, better than Campbell's been, better than Story's been, better than Abreu's been. Like, that's the thing. He's been one of the better hitters for the team over the past couple weeks. Granted, the Red Sox haven't won a lot of games recently, 3-7 over the last 10, 8-12 over the last 20. Like, they have been struggling. I would keep Cedan as of right now. Abreu would be the guy I would move, and I would keep Duran just because of the fact that how good he was last year. It's tough to really give up on that early, and I know he's not doing the exact same thing, like I said, this year, but it's tough to move on from that, especially from the perspective of you have a guy that was an all-star last year, you haven't paid him yet, and obviously he has 2 or 3 years left of team control. Trading him that early would just be a little bit surprising, but if, you know, Craig Breslow and the management, you know, team, you know, upstairs don't really think this guy is necessarily that piece of the future, they could go on and move for him and get a probably pretty good package for him, more than I think that you'd get for Abreu. And in that case, maybe bring up Roman Anthony and he ends up being, you know, in left field if that's what they, you know, indeed do. I would not do that personally. I would keep Duran, just like you noted. I think this situation, now we're going to compare it to the Bruins, it's kind of like when the Bruins had that influx of defensemen. They said, okay, let's trade Johnny Boychuk just because we have to, because we have too many. And then lo and behold, a few weeks later, they already have 2 or 3 injuries to their D-men, and then they have no one that can replace that. You know what I mean? So I don't want to be like that, where you trade Duran just because you have, you know, a prospect that's coming up that you never really know how prospects are going to pan out, right? That's the thing. Which Meyer and Campbell, they're very young. Anthony's very young. The guys the Red Sox traded to the White Sox, Kyle Taylor just got called up. He's going to be making his major league debut for Chicago. And then Brandon Montgomery's tearing it up in the minor leagues. But you never know how these prospects are going to pan out. These are 5 top 55 prospects before the year began. I was highest on Montgomery and Taylor, honestly. Those are the two guys I did not want to trade. And I know most Red Sox fans disagree with me. And, you know, they wanted to keep Anthony and Meyer and Campbell, and it is what it is, right? At the end of the day, you never know if prospects are going to pan out. But the way things stand right now, I wouldn't trade one of those guys just because just like I noted, you never know when injuries happen, when you'll end up needing more outfielders. But if I'm picking one of those guys between the 3 that are starting right now, it's Abreu for me. It's Abreu. And I know you would go Rafael, and that's the nice thing, right? It's a nice way to look at, you know, how Red Sox fans, you know, see things. There's always going to be fans that see one thing the other way and one, you know, agree and disagree. That's the thing about us. We'll see it 2 different ways, but we can see eye to eye why they would trade Abreu, why they would trade Rafael, or why they would trade Duran. If you don't think, you know, those guys in the future, they don't want to really pay them. But I don't know. It's a tough decision. But Anthony comes up, ideally, day one. Where do you have him? Do you have him in center field? Do you have him in right field? Because let's say Duran is still here. You probably would put him in center, would be my guess in that case, which I know he's played right field, and I mean, he's versatile. You probably put him anywhere. My eyes, he's probably in right field or center, batting 6th or 7th, which Meyer was put batting cleanup by his 3rd or 4th game because there was no one that was hitting well, and they kind of just expected more and put him in a tough spot. But ideally, to make it comfortable on him, where would you have him on the field, and then where would you have him in the lineup?
Yeah, I think right field would be a good spot. You know, you don't have to play Willier every day. You don't have to only put, you know, Rob out there when Willier's on the bench. So I think, you know, bring him up, put him in a position that he's comfortable with. Lineup-wise, off the top of my head, not sure where he's been batting in the Worcester lineup.
Top 3, yeah.
But, okay, yeah. So that being said, I wouldn't put him – I don't think I wouldn't put him top 3, top 4 in this lineup because I think, you know – obviously, we've talked about the issues that this lineup has had, but, you know, I think, and who knows, maybe shaking it up is going to help it. But I think to start him out, I think 6'7" is a decent spot, because again, you know, he's hitting the crap out of everything that they throw to him in Worcester. And, you know, there's not an enormous jump between AAA and the big leagues, but there is still a jump, and you don't know how he's going to react to, you know, the pitching up here. So I think 6'7" to start him out, and he continues to do what he's doing in Worcester, put him in the 4 or 5 spot.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's a good way to look at it. Kind of just keep the options open. I think that's probably what the Red Sox want to do when they do indeed call him up and he's in the lineup. I know he's been, it looks like yesterday he was batting leadoff for Worcester, which is interesting. I know he was hitting second or third at one point last year. And when you have Meyer there, and at one point, you know, Kyle Tail, Christian Campbell, they had a lot of different guys that, you know, you could throw in that lineup anywhere, you know, and make it work. But anyway, now he's hitting leadoff, it looks like yesterday, playing in left field. So ideally, if you do throw him in the lineup, maybe you take Sadon out of center, bench him for a day, keep Abreu in right, you put Duran in center, and then you put Roman Anthony in left. I know he's versatile, he probably could play anywhere in the outfield, but the way it looks right now, he was batting leadoff yesterday, which that Red Sox lineup in AAA, I mean, there is some talent there. Nick Sogard, I know it's a guy me and you both like as a utility guy on the Red Sox roster. Then you have Garcia, the password DHing there, who is a top prospect for the Red Sox. Vaughn Grissom was obviously the big piece. And then Chris Sale deal with the Red Sox, you know, got back in return. And then you have Blaze Jordan, a guy that good, was at one point.
Good to see him finally start to climb up the ranks here. It's,
yeah.
He graduated, what was it? He was 2020. Drafted in 2020. Yeah. So, you know, took him 5 years to get up here. And, I mean, I know myself included, a lot of Red Sox fans, we drafted him out of high school, I believed. And, I mean, you want to talk about tearing the cover off the ball. I mean, that kid could hit just about anything you threw to him. So, you know, good to see him finally make his way up to the AAA level. I don't know if we'll see him Fenway anytime soon, but, you know, maybe a step in the right direction for that kid.
Definitely. Knows a guy that you liked a lot, and we didn't have much about for a little bit of time, and probably because of all the prospects the Red Sox have and had. When you have Kyle Till, Brady Montgomery, and then, you know, obviously the big three that we did indeed keep, Campbell, Meyer, and Anthony. And then you've got Franklin Arias, who is a top prospect in Major League Baseball right now. I think he's top 50. You got a couple other guys as well that are top prospects, like Garcia being one. So I think you just got probably other guys that, you know, had a little bit more shine, a little more, you know, talk about them. But he's a guy that maybe, you know, could potentially be at the Major League level one day. We'll see how he does in AAA. But let's jump over to our all-time lineups, which this is something we did for fun. And one thing I do want to note before we do begin, relievers, a lot of these guys were guys we saw play. And I think that's just because, you know, no one's really talking about the 1960s and 70s and 80s relief pitching staff usually. Like, we have guys in our lineup from those days. And those, a lot of the time, those are hitters, right? And guys or pitchers that were big-time names. Relievers, like, it was tough to really, you know as many of those growing up. But I think we have a good range of players. And this is all our opinion. I know everyone's going to have a different lineup. And some people will agree with us, some people will disagree. And that's the beauty of this. This is all, you know, just for fun at the end of the day. But we'll start off with, do you want to do 21st century first and then all time?
Sure, we can do that.
All right, let's start off. We'll go 21st century, 2000 to the present day, Red Sox lineup. And I'll let you go first, or I can go first. I'll let you decide.
All right, yeah, I'll go for it here. So I think that's important to note, is a lot of this opinion-based. I know when you and I were talking over our final lineups here, I brought the word nostalgia up a lot as well, so... you know, obviously over the last, you know, our 25 years of life, we've seen some pretty good Red Sox teams, some pretty bad Red Sox teams, but, you know, at the end of the day, we've had some really solid guys play. So I'll give you my 1-9 here out on the field. So I'm putting Pedro at the top of my order, you know, obviously one of the best to ever toe the rubber for the Sox. No doubt in my pick behind the dish, putting the captain back there, Jason Veritek. Got Kevin Youkilis at first, Dustin Pedroia at second, Xander Bogaerts at short, Mike Lowell throwing it back to the early 2000s with Mike Lowell over at third. Outfield left to right, bringing Manny back, hoping he doesn't hide in the monster in between innings, but we're going to put Manny in left, Jackie Bradley in right. And made a late switch here because came to my senses a little bit. Mookie Betts out in right field. And then, of course, you know, the greatest designated hitter, David Ortiz, you know, to ever do it in the lineup there. So my my lineup, because I know we went, you know, we both went lineup rotation, lineup rotation, relievers, bench. We got Mookie leading off, Pedroia batting second. And then, of course, brought the best 3-4 duo to ever do it back. Manny at third, Poppy batting fourth. Got Mike Lowell in the 5-hole, which I think that 3-4-5 was actually a combination we had for a pretty long time there. Mm-hmm. Bogart's batting sixth, Veritek seventh, Euclid's batting eighth, JBJ in his 9-hole spot, just like back in the day.
I like it, though, honestly. I really like your lineup, and ours are similar, definitely in the infield. And on the outfield, we have some, you know, variety, which is awesome. I think with your lineup, too, you have some defense as well. Like, some people did disagree in the office about JBJ being in center, but JBJ, arguably the best defensive player the Red Sox have ever had, at least in our lifetime. I know Fred Lynn was great as well. But in our lifetime, Jackie Bradley Jr. is probably the best defensive player the Red Sox have had. So I know some people disagreed having him out there in center. He did also have his clutch moments, was the ALCS MVP, did at one point have a 30-plus game hit streak, you know, when we were in high school. I think when we were in 9th or 10th grade back in, like, 2015 to 2016, had a really good stretch. And also hit, like, I think 20-something home runs 1 year, like 28 home runs 1 year in, like, 2016. So I know a lot of people talk about Jackie Bradley, and, you know, some people might disagree with that, but I completely understand why he was out there, because he's that good defensively. And also was streaky at times. I know towards the end of his time with the Red Sox, he struggled hitting at the plate, especially in that second stint in Boston. But he's a guy I was always a big fan of. So I actually loved your lineup. And now for mine, I got Pedro on the mound, Veritek at catcher. Same thing, same battery. Michael at third. Bogarts at short. Dustin Pedroia at second. Kevin Youkilis at first. So the entire same battery and infield. Left to right, the outfield. We got Manny in left. I got Jacoby Ellsbury in center over JBJ. And then I got Mookie Betts in right. And then my batting lineup, I get Ellsbury leading off, Pedroia at second, which, just like you said before the episode, Pedroia is just the best two-hitter you can have. I think everybody would love to have him in their lineup. Then I got Mookie Betts in right field, batting third. I get Ortiz at DH at cleanup. Manny batting fifth. Bogarts batting sixth. Mike Lowe batting seventh, which is pretty crazy, honestly. Kevin Youkilis batting eighth. And Jason Veritek batting ninth. So that's my 1-9. And then for the rotation, I think that's where this gets really interesting. I think there's a lot of ways we could go with this, considering some guys are only Red Sox for a few years, or they're only good for just a couple years, and some people might keep them off the list. I'm definitely Chris Sale's in mind. I'll just have no disclosure. I'll be straight up with it. I know a lot of people disagree with me on that, it seems, but Chris Sale is in my 21st century rotation. But I can go first, I guess, for this one, since I made you go first last time, so I'll give my starting rotation to start. We got Pedro as the one, very clear cut, like you said, one of the best to ever do it. My number two is Chris Sale. My number three is Tim Wakefield. Number four is John Lester. And then my number five is Curt Schilling. I want to go Nate Eovaldi, and Eovaldi was in this until probably 5 minutes before you know, we began filming this episode. I want to go Eovaldi, but I went Curt Schilling just because of how clutch he was and was a big piece to us, you know, winning that 2004 and the 2007 World Series. So wasn't easy taking Eovaldi out of the lineup, because he was a mainstay with this Red Sox team for 5 years. Every single opening day, it seems like he was starting, because, you know, Chris Sale wasn't healthy for a while, especially like 2020, 2021, 2022. But I wanted Eovaldi in there. I even wanted Josh Beckett in there, but I ended up going with Curt Schilling and John Lester over those two guys. But Eovaldi, honorable mention, I did want him in this rotation. But who's your starting rotation?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously, as mentioned, got Pedro at the one. John Lester is my number two, and then this is where a little bit of that nostalgia kicked in here, because, you know, I'm one guy off of probably one of my favorite Red Sox rotations ever. Following Lester, got Beckett, Clay Buchholz, and, I mean, by far and away, one of my favorite names to ever play for the Boston Red Sox, Daisuke Matsuzaka.
There you go. All right, you do have some nice nostalgia, some, like, nice memories. I mean, when you look back at that era, I mean, those guys were fun to watch, which probably more fun than watching the Red Sox this year with their pitching staff, considering we're 20th in ERA and 23rd in starting ERA. But these guys were different, the guys we mentioned. But Daisuke at the five. All right, I like it. I like that. That's different. See, we both had a different rotation. I think one thing that people disagreed with me on in the office was Chris Sale, which I understand at Chris Sale's time in Boston, there were a lot of injuries. But you look at 2017, 2018, was top four in Cy Young, top two even one of those years, 2.56 ERA in those two seasons, 2.25 FIP, and also did win a World Series with us. Chris Sale had to be in my five. I understand not putting him in, but I know we had some people in the office that disagree, which I understood why. But with your five, though, I could see why all of those guys are in there. Buchholz, obviously, with the no-no, and was another guy that showed up. I mean, he was a guy that was a mainstay for a while in that Red Sox rotation. And the Dice Keg, a lot of nostalgia.
Yeah, got it. Gotta love it. Yeah, it was just takes me back. Those mid-2000s teams, you know, those were some of my favorite Red Sox teams to watch. So had to throw some of the guys in there for sure.
Definitely. And then we'll jump over to the relievers now. I'll give mine really quick, which these relievers for the 21st century team is going to be similar to the all-time Red Sox team, as we already noted. Like, it was tough. We're trying to do this based off of, like, what we know. And then also, yeah, you could look at some stats, too. I did look at some stats, definitely, when I was looking at some of the old-time players. But I think relievers, it's tough, you know, to know as many of them. So I know we're going to be missing some guys when we get to the all-time team. But relievers for the 21st century, I got Junichi Tozawa, Craig Kimbrell, Andrew Miller is my setup guy. He'll be my eighth inning guy, especially needing a lefty out there. Hideki Okajima, Koji Uehara, and then my main closer is Jonathan Papelbon.
Yeah, so I'm not going to lie, Joe. Looking at my since 2000s 21st century relievers, I kind of like them more than my all-time, but that's all right. My 21st century bullpen, I've got Evaldi, Wakefield, and then a couple guys from way back. We're going to follow it up. Derek Lowe and Mike Timlin. Those are some names. When I wrote them down, I was like, wow, haven't heard these guys in a while. And then bringing in the psychopath Jonathan Papelbon to set up Koji Uehara.
I like it, though. So that's the nice thing with this, which obviously Nate Evaldi was a big time reason the Red Sox won that 2018 World Series, you know, those six innings in relief, giving the Red Sox bullpen some time to relax. Obviously, with it being the World Series, you don't want to tax the bullpen too much, even though obviously every game is important in the World Series. So he went out there in long relief and was a big part of that. So I love having him out there. And then the nice thing, too, is when we get to my all-time lineup, all-time pitching rotation. I didn't have Tim Wakefield on the starting five necessarily, but had him in the bullpen because it's tough to obviously have a five-man rotation. It's tough to really pick five guys. But that's why we're going to throw some starters out there as we're leaving. That's why I want to just preface with that before I give mine, just like you had, you know, some guys that did start in your rotation in the bullpen, just because I know sometimes people disagree with us, and that's fine. That's just how it goes. But I love Koji being your closer over Papelbon, which I like, which I'm fine with. I had Papelbon as my closer, but I like going with Koji. Just yeah, nostalgia.
You know, I think, obviously, you look at the four World Series we've won since 2000, obviously the importance of 2013 and everything that did happen that early on in that year. I think, you know, no disrespect to Papelbon at all. I mean, he was nuts. You know, that was a guy, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the cameras cut away in the bullpen and he was, you know, smacking his head against the bullpen wall before he ran out to the mound. But, you know, I just think I liked Koji's stuff a little bit more, but couldn't go away from Papelbon there. I think that, you know, you bring him in the eighth, you really get guys down about themselves thinking, you know, we gotta face this guy, and then, you know, you have Koji come in, slam the door. So
yeah. I love it. No, it's great. Great look having him in there. And like you said, it's a big piece of nostalgia with that 2013 run, having him there. Obviously, he was a big piece of it. And now for the bench, which I can give my bench first. You can give yours. I'll let you go first because I did the last few first. So I'll let you break down your bench.
Yeah. So got a couple guys that, you know, a couple utility guys in here, a couple, you know, position specific. So and this is in no particular order off the bench. But one of my favorite Red Sox of all time, I've got Kevin Millar in there. You know, solid at the plate, not star-studded defenseman by any means. But, you know, if Uke needs a break here and there, you throw Millar over at first. I got Christian Vasquez to back up Jason Varitek. Very tough not putting Doug Mirabelli in there because, you know.
Stud.
Who's gonna catch the knuckleball when Wake comes out of the bullpen? Next up, I've got probably the ultimate multi-purpose and, you know, utility player in Brock Holt. You know, only postseason cycle in Major League Baseball history. So how could you not? I've got my guy Trot Nixon out in right field. Trot Nixon, another one of my all-time favorite Red Sox. Mike Napoli as well in there. And then I've got Jaron Duran for when, you know, Manny wants to go hide out in the Green Monster for a little bit.
I love it. I love you. A lot of like guys that were on that 2004 team and then even ranging to today, having Jaron Duran. Like, that's a great range of players. Most of mine, I have Devers on my bench, so he's my only current player off the bench here. And some other guys are still playing, like Andrew Benintendi, but obviously not on the Red Sox. So the rest of my bench, well, I already broke down Devers and Benintendi. Then I got Brock Holt, just like you. I got J.D. Martinez as an extra hitter and outfielder off the bench. And I originally did have Kevin Millar, but then I realized I didn't have a backup catcher. I didn't. And Mike Napoli was a guy that I potentially was going to put in my on my bench, and I ended up having Millar at one point. But now I look at it, I need a backup catcher. And even though he didn't catch for the Red Sox, did catch a lot in the past before coming to Boston. So I'm going to have Mike Napoli in there just as a utility guy to play first or potentially catcher in this lineup. And like you said, it's going to be tough without Mirabelli there. I think Mirabelli, this is a 26-man roster, but Mirabelli would be the 27th just because you need him.
Man.
You need him there. And obviously there's a lot of nostalgia with him and a lot of nostalgia with Kevin Millar. And that's a guy that I know you love the clip from the 2004 ALCS when he said, "Don't let us win one." Was telling Dan Shaughnessy, "Don't let us win one game.
Don't let us win today."
And that's it. Here we are, obviously, 20 years later, 21 years later, I should say, with a World Series multiple after that, obviously being three after that. But with that being probably the most important one was 2004, breaking the curse. So need to have him in there just for the nostalgia. So I loved having you having him in there. And then a manager, I think it's probably going to be the same for the 21st century at all time. But I have Tito Francona
as
my manager. So
hands down.
I love it.
One of the best.
Yeah, definitely. Now we'll dive into the 21st, from the 21st century into the all-time, which, like I already noted, there's going to be a lot of guys we're probably missing or guys that, you know, from the old-time days that we might not be considering. I know we had someone telling us about a couple of relievers that we should have been thinking of, which completely agree with, you know, with that thought, since, as I noted, relievers, I feel like that was the toughest thing for us to pick, since most relievers we know were today's day. I'll go first, I guess, just because I made you go first last time, which it's tough to throw you out there first. So I'll start out here. Pedro on the mound again. I have Carlton Fisk behind the plate. It was tough going with him over Veritek, but it was pretty close. And then at first base, Jimmy Fox, one of my all-time favorite Red Sox. Honestly, he's been the guy I've become more of a fan of over the last like year. I've been reading a lot more about him in probably the last 6 months or so. A guy I've become a lot more fond of. And then at second base, Dustin Pedroia, shortstop, Xander Bogaerts. Was tough of a Noma, but sided with Xander. I was a big fan of his. Wade Boggs at third base. In left field, the on-base machine, Ted Williams, which one interesting stat. The top nine single-season on-base percentages in Red Sox history, he was all nine of them, which is nuts. And then Mookie Betts in center, which I know he played a lot of right, but he can play center. I have him in center. And I put Babe Ruth in right field, which I know he didn't really play outfield at all for the Red Sox. That was more, which he played left field for the Red Sox, but he played more right field once he went to New York and played for the Yankees, and he was still pitching as well. But wanted to have Babe Ruth out there. I know he wasn't a big-time home run hitter for the Red Sox. He only hit 49 in 6 years with the Red Sox and then hit 54 in his first year with the Yankees, which is a stat I just came across when I was looking it up. But 308 hitter for the Red Sox, 981 OPS. I really wanted him in this lineup. I know that means guys like Howie Yastrzemski and Dwight Evans and Jim Rice weren't in my starting lineup in the outfield, but had to have Babe Ruth in there. And then the DH is David Ortiz. I don't think anybody's going to argue that. But that's my starting nine. And then my batting order, I have Mookie Betts leading off. And then I have Wade Boggs, Ted Williams, Jimmy Fox, like I noted, one of my favorite players for the Red Sox, especially when I look at old-time days. DH, David Ortiz, batting fifth. Babe Ruth, batting sixth, which is nuts. And then batting seventh, Xander Bogaerts, batting eighth. Dustin Pedroia, it was tough to have him higher in this lineup. I wanted to have him higher in this lineup, but Wade Boggs ended up being my number two hitter in this lineup. A great on-base guy as well. Great contact hitter, just like Pedroia was. And then Carlton Fisk catching and batting ninth. So that is my 1-9 for my all-time lineup.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I mean, on the mounds, obviously, you know, who else but Pedro. Behind the dish, I did go same battery as you, so I did go with Carlton Fisk over Veritek. Infield, fairly similar. I think the only difference we had was at shortstop. So, you know, I had Jimmy Fox at first. I had PD at second. I did elect to go with Nomar at short, and then Wade Boggs at the hot corner. Left to right, Teddy Ballgame out in left field, you know, man in the monster where he belongs. This next one wasn't too popular in the office. And again, this is where the nostalgia comes in. But, you know, I kind of tied this into my batting lineup and, you know, him just being in my eyes, you know, the ultimate leadoff guy. Johnny Damon out in center field. Johnny Damon did not make my 21st century team, which is the one I kind of focused in on a little bit more first. And then I went all time. I know that one's going to get a lot of what are you thinkings out there. But you know what? I'll stand by it. And then Dwight Evans out in right field. And, of course, Big Poppy as your DH. So my start and batting order, as I said, Johnny Damon leading it off. Similar to you, kind of, you know, thinking between, you know, where do I put Pedroia in this lineup? You know, Boggs is a huge, you know, hit for contact guy, on base guy. So I went Pedroia 2, Wade Boggs 3. I think can't hurt to have, you know, some solid contact guys back to back at the top of your order there. Then, you know, bat and cleanup to bring them all in. David Ortiz is DH, and then batting fifth, got Ted Williams, Jimmy Fox batting sixth, Carlton Fisk seventh, Dewey eighth, and then Nomar batting ninth.
Well, I like it. I like to have a Nomar in there too, because that's something we, you know, had different things on. I had Xander at shortstop, you had Nomar at short. But like you noted before this episode, Nomar did carry the offense for the Red Sox for a while, and was kind of the, before David Ortiz was kind of the face of the team before David Ortiz. Once we won a 2004, Ortiz kind of took over as the face of the franchise. But there was a while where Nomar was that marquee player for the Red Sox, and obviously in some bad days as well where they were losing when there were high expectations. They were spending a lot of money. Nomar was the face of the team back then. So he got us through some tough days, and obviously even though was not necessarily in there in the World Series, was still part of that team that season. And now for my starting rotation, which Pedro's still at the top. And then it gets interesting after that. I did change it up a lot because at first it was Pedro and then Chris Sale. And then I thought about it. And I said, okay, Chris Sale was good for the Red Sox, which honestly, consistency was the tough thing because he was injured a lot. But his first 2 years, Chris Sale was a top five pitcher for the Red Sox in my eyes. If you look at a two-year window, he was dominant. I took Chris Sale out of this, though. I had him in the 21st century one, which I feel like is as good of an honor anyways. So I took him out of this all-time one. And so my number two, I have Cy Young. At my number three, Roger Clemens. At my number four, which I want to have some old-timers in here just because I have Lefty Grove, a guy that pitched in the 30s and then early 1940s. I didn't realize how good he was stats-wise. 3.34 career ERA, but also 105 wins, 62 losses, 3.66 field independent pitching, which if you look at that, like, it's not a bad number four to have. I know there's some guys that I could have had maybe as the number four, like John Lester, even Chris Sale. But I went with Lefty Grove. They just have another old-timer in this. And then at my number five, Smokey Joe Wood. A great name, obviously. Sounds like a baseball player right there. But a 1.99 ERA. Pitched very early on, 1908 to 1915. Was there when the Red Sox were at the bottom of the division, but was there in some really good days as well. Was really consistent. Some ridiculous numbers there that I already mentioned. And I know people say it was early on, but still pretty impressive. 1.99 ERA and a 2.24 FIP. So great numbers there overall. And now I'll let you get to your starting rotation.
Yeah, so again, as I said, Pedro's my number one guy. I've got Clemens at my two, Wakefield at three, and then Cy Young at four. I know, obviously, I think you've got Cy Young at the two, but doesn't hurt to have a little bit of depth in the rotation. And then my number five guy, one of the grittiest pitchers we've ever had here. You know, a guy who he'll go out, he'll throw you 120 pitches and not bat an eye. El Tiante, Louis Tiant.
I like it. I like it. That's a good way to round it up there, though. It's a good one through five. And like we both noted, like our one through five is pretty different, which is nice. So obviously, there were some mainstays in there. Cy Young, Pedro, Roger Clemens. But after that, it got interesting. Louis Tiant, though. And obviously, God bless Louis, the Red Sox fan base. And obviously, games at Fenway aren't the same, because he was always a guy that would be there every opening day and a lot of the games during the season as well.
Absolutely.
So now we'll go to the relievers, which... My relievers, which I know we didn't do. Did we do the bench? We didn't do the bench yet, but we're already staying with pitching, so I'll go right to the relievers, which a lot of these guys are guys we saw pitch. Like I already noted, it's really tough to know a lot of the relievers. As we noted, a lot of the colorful players were starting pitchers or, you know, big-time home run hitters, or really good utility guys. Those are the guys we knew and grew up, you know, watching a lot. So these relievers, a lot of these guys are current or guys we saw, you know, pitch in the last 15 years. But here's my 1-6 in the bullpen. Hideki Okajima, Tim Wakefield, which I need to have him in this all-time lineup. And I figured if I don't have him in the rotation, throw him in the bullpen because he was a reliever at one point as well. Koji Uehara, Andrew Miller, Bob Stanley is my only throwback, really, before the 21st century. He's the only guy in here that wasn't somebody I saw, growing up. And then my closer, once again, Jonathan Papelbon.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, like I said, I kind of like my 21st century relievers a little more, but, a few names here in my all-time that, we've talked about our stance on the relievers and everything, and I think, I look at the six I have for the 21st century and the six that I have for all time, I could probably make a much better bullpen if I, put all 12 together and pick and choose. But for relievers, I have Bronson Arroyo, Hideki Okajima, Daniel Bard, Andrew Miller, Jonathan Papelbon, once again, my setup guy for Keith Foulke.
Keith Foulke. I like it. And you had Daniel Bard in there who was – had a really good couple of years, and then once we try to make him a starter, it just kind of hurt all his progression and development.
Which, but, I mean, that's so tough for I will never understand that decision. You've got a solid arm in the bullpen. You get 2-3 innings max out of him. I'll never understand the, hey, we're gonna make you a starter. But that's why I'm not a Major League Baseball manager.
It's tough, though, because he was an elite setup guy, too, and he was the eighth inning guy for Papelbon. He was really, really good. Was one of the only pitchers at the time for the Red Sox that was throwing 100. Kind of like the first one, at least in my day, from what I remember, was that guy that was always consistently hitting 99, 100. And obviously now it's just a normal thing in Major League Baseball. Everyone's throwing 100, which is crazy. But
when Chapman doesn't throw a pitch 102, I'm like, what's going on? Did he not enough last night? Come on now.
You're right. He's been great, though, for the Red Sox. That's one guy that I think we should highlight. Has been one of the highlights, at least out of the bullpen.
Stare down and send me running, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
You strike me out, fastball 102, you stare me down, I am running back to the dugout.
Don't want to get up again against him. No,
I'm all set.
All you need is a sinker to go inside, hit you off the knee, and there goes the season.
Man, you're done.
Which is tough. And then for the bench, though, I think the bench is where we'll have some differences, which is nice, too. I didn't have Dwight Evans in my starting lineup, so Dwight Evans here to be, first base, right field, utility guy, can play both those positions. I have him on the bench. Manny Ramirez, Kyle Yastrzemski, another one that was tough to not have in the starting lineup. Jim Rice. And then I was between Jason Varitek and Bobby Doerr. Bobby Doerr to be that backup at second base. Maybe be a utility guy in the infield potentially, even though he's primarily second baseman. But you need a backup catcher on every single team. So Jason Varitek is my backup catcher here.
Yeah, so my bench a little outfield heavy, but a couple of these guys, utility guys that you can definitely bring into the infield to help you out. So Jim Rice to back up Williams. Of course, Jim, one of the best to patrol left field at Fenway. Behind him, Manny Ramirez. Don't necessarily need to put him in the field. If, Ortiz needs an off day, just let Manny swing the bat. Jason Varitek to back up Fisk. Obviously need that backup catcher. Babe Ruth, I know you've got him in your starting lineup. I elected to go, Dwight Evans over him. But, regardless of the fact that, he caused us a lot of pain over the years. I know not us specifically, but the generations of a Red Sox nation beforehand. But still, one of the all-time greats. Mookie is in there on the bench. So, for anybody freaking out that I have Johnny Damon out there, don't worry. Mookie's on the bench. He's going to get in. He's there. And then another good utility guy. Stick him in the outfield. Put him at first base. I've got Yaz.
Okay. All right. There you go. I like it. I like it, though. Some utility there, and obviously pretty outfield heavy, which it's tough for the Red Sox. They've had a lot of Hall of Fame outfielders, so it was tough to fit an all-time lineup and try to get all those guys in together.
But, I mean, Mookie, The Dodgers have turned him into what, a second baseman? So
yeah, second base and shortstop. Hey, he's been primarily for both them.
He's Petey or Nomar need a day off. Let's throw Mookie in the infield.
You're right. He can play shortstop and play second as well. So you have utility there as well off the bench, which is great. And I think one guy we didn't have was Fred Lynn, which I know is one of the best defensive players for the Red Sox ever as well. But there's some nostalgia in here. Like Mookie Betts is in my starting lineup, just like Johnny Damon's in yours, because these are some of the favorite players of all time, which Mookie is one of the best Red Sox of all time, just like Johnny Damon was a legend too. And obviously in different regards, they're two different players, but both of them had, you know, good times here in Boston, won some rings too. So obviously that goes a long way. But anyways, Brian, anything else you want to close with? Which I know we didn't talk any Bruins today, but we'll get to the Bruins another time, which there's a lot going on with them there.
We'll talk about them in October.
Okay, we'll wait. Which obviously got a new head coach now. So
Marco Sturm, welcome back to Boston.
What are your thoughts on that? Quick minute, which I know I said we wouldn't give Bruins, but here we are right now talking bees. Give me one quick synopsis about how you feel about the Bruins bringing him back to be now their head coach and be their leader.
This is going to be a long shot, Joe, but if by some act of God we win the cup this year, I'd say we won the Joe Thornton trade.
It's come back. See, now everything goes full circle. Everything goes full circle, though. It's a good way to look at it. But obviously they did give Don Sweeney a new contract. So now he will be back for at least a couple more seasons. And so obviously now they're going to continue having him there as the leader of the front office, and now have a new head coach, which it seems like every single year they're bringing in a new one. It seems like over the last, since Claude Julien left, and then obviously Butch Cassidy had a little bit of a run here and had Montgomery, and he ends up getting fired, and then having Sacco as just kind of a backup, you know, that just replaced him just for the season as an interim. And now he's obviously gone. In a blink, you've had three head coaches now over the past year, which is nuts.
They've got to figure it out on Causeway, that's for sure.
That's it. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your time. Much appreciated. An honor to be able to talk here and be able to have you to bring in all this Red Sox insight, the Boston sports passion. It was a true honor having you on, so thank you so much for taking the time.
Appreciate it, Joe.
Take care now. Thank you.